I'm just going to keep doing it. Because it's the news, according to me. Well, good Friday morning. It is Friday morning. And I am here, your host, here for you, my faithful listeners, on September 13th, Friday the 13th. Here we go. 10:43 a.m. Central Time. I think it is 11:43, I guess it is. I guess that's Eastern Time. Very late show we have today. I just made it back from Tulsa this morning. I'm on the boat. I got in this morning about 7 o'clock and into Chicago, 8 o'clock Central Time. So it was a very early morning for me. I had to, of course, get some breakfast and do some things and get some things ready to go, get the boat opened up. And I'm basically taking the rest of the day off. So I'm going to be doing a show here. It's going to be a short show, but it's going to be a good show because I'm going to just, you know, because all of my shows are good. Because of you, my faithful listeners. I have, you inspire me because you have a, you have the fortitude to listen to almost 800 episodes and continue to come back and hopefully listen to one that's actually good. That's your, you've been listening this long with the hopes that they can't possibly, at some point he's got to have a good show. And so you're playing the odds on this. At least 1 out of 1,000 has got to be good. You're going to play it to 1,000 or maybe 2,000. I get that. And that inspires me. That's encouraging that people have that kind of stamina and it's the P word. It's they're willing to pursue their they have a lot of well whatever it is. I don't know. I'm an old man. I'm an old confused man. I don't know what I'm doing. It is Friday. I have chai. It's a very strong cup of chai. I probably made it a little bit too strong. Maybe I also have some coconut creamer as my backup cup this morning. It's kind of exciting, actually. I actually do have a cup. Well, there's no ice left. I should probably put some ice in this. Chick-fil-A sweet tea. So I guess you know now where I went for breakfast on my way back through the highway. I know exactly where all the Chick-fil-A's are, and my car just kind of naturally steers towards them. So I'm gonna put some ice in this. You're gonna hear me do this because this is almost like a live broadcast, only it's not. It's recorded, but it's not without any editing whatsoever. There's going to be some ice going in this tea, so that it's iced tea. Otherwise, it's just tea. So there we go. Do that some more. And there we go. Now we got everything all settled in here, ready to do the show. Ah, that's good. That's good to wash down the chai with. The combination of those two are just perfect. Now, I have a few things I want to talk about. There's so many shenanigans going on. Now, the Democrats are so, they lack so much self-awareness, inflection, they just don't have any clue as to who they are and why they are and what they do. I don't think they understand. They are so blown out of, just like when they're standing up there saying, he's going to weaponize the justice system and imprison his political opponents, which is exactly what they're doing to him. They're the ones doing it. He never did it. He could have done it. He never did it. Now he's saying he might do it this time, sure. Because they're doing it to him. What these people are doing is atrocious. They won't stop with this. They're not going to stop. They're not going to stop. And they shouldn't stop. They're not going to stop. Boy, there's a lot of things happening here with this whole the political debate. Apparently, and you know, I guess I didn't play this factor in the debate stuff. One of the issues I think the Democrats are dealing with right now is the fact that most of their followers, most of the people who vote for them, do not listen to debates. Because they don't care about issues. They don't care about policy. If they're forced to listen to it, they probably aren't going to listen in a way that's going to change their opinion. I mean, they don't care. They, They just care about feelings. They don't care about substance at all anyway. The people who do care about substance and policies are the people who are going to look at that and say, now I do know some people who will watch that and say, you know, I can't vote for either of these people, or I don't like either one of them. The fact that Trump was getting angry and mad, and he's, which is what they were trying to draw out from. That you have to realize, if anyone is put in a situation where they have all kinds of analytical minds putting together an attack, nobody, the kindest person I know, could not stand on a stage and debate someone if they set it all up to make the person angry and mad and not have some kind of a reaction to that. In my opinion, I think he maintained his presence very well, his presence of mind. He did get very angry at one point just because he's mad at what they've done to this country. And that's, I think if you can see it that way, then you understand the anger that's there. Otherwise, you just think he's just an angry old man. They're eating the dogs! They're eating the cats! They're eating the dogs! I don't know. That thing has sparked a whole flailing thunder, you know, just creating a lot of craziness there going on. So, this is what we have now. We have a wackiness that apparently didn't do so well. Kamala is not going to get a real bump in any of this. Of course, now they're going to use the sound bites. They're going to use all the stuff that they can to make this happen. But they're finding out, basically, that she does not benefit by doing debates. Nobody's listening to them. She's not changing any votes. Trump is realizing that, hey, the votes are, you know, people are going to start casting their ballots next week. This certainly isn't, you know, worth doing anything like this. So, I think what we have right now is a situation where there's just going to be a whole lot of back and forth. People have pretty much decided. There are very few undecided voters. I think actually it wasn't Jake Tapper. It was Garrett. Somebody, Garrett. He was saying that he couldn't find. He interviewed 20 people. None of them were undecided. And he said basically the Trump voters are as solid as ever after the debate. And he said he was having a hard time finding, actually, he was having a hard time finding supporters for Kamala that were actually that solid. Now, again, I think this race is going to come down to motivation. Are the voters for Kamala motivated enough to go out and vote for them? Of course, they made a big deal out of Taylor Swift being getting her endorsement. Now, you have to realize more than half of Taylor Swift's fans are under the voting age. That'll be the next thing. They also want to reduce the voting age to 16. I don't know if you realize that or not. That's something else that they want to do, because they can fool those kids. They can't fool the adults, so they have to go for the kids. That's their big challenge now. One of the things that they're doing, I was listening to Robert Gavea. Now, this is, of course, I'm not a lawyer. He is a lawyer, and I'm not a doctor or a lawyer or a financial counselor or advisor in any sense of the word. But he actually had a very good, it was very good analysis of some of the things that are going on. There's a fellow by the name of West. What was it? Not West. Cornell somebody. He was running for the Green in the Green, I think it was the Green Party, I believe it was. It was a third party candidate. He was trying to run. Of course, he went to some, on some shows with some progressives, and he didn't answer questions very well. Jimmy Dore just raked him over the coals. Jimmy Dore is very quickly becoming a conservative. He doesn't realize it. I don't think he realizes where he's going, but he still thinks he's a progressive. He's not. He's quickly becoming a conservative. This happened. This sneaks up on some people. I've seen it happen before. It happened to H.A. Goodman. He was all in on the progressive movement. Bernie supporter, one of the biggest Bernie supporters in the country, was on national broadcasts. And all of a sudden, with the whole thing with Bernie happened, he just was so disenfranchised, so disillusioned by the whole thing, he ended up becoming a Trump supporter. this happens to people. Now, and of course, now he has a more of a conservative mentality. Small government, limited government, doesn't trust government, which I think is where we cut. I'm rubbing up against a fender here. I think this tends to happen, and it sneaks up on people sometimes. I think that's kind of where Jimmy Dore is headed. He claims he's not going to vote for Trump. He claims he's, you know, but he certainly doesn't. He's certainly very, how should I say, he's not unkind to Trump. He certainly is much more sympathetic to Trump as a candidate than anybody else. He definitely is pointing out the issues that happened with, he points out things on both parties in terms of character and honesty, but he's definitely a socialist. He has more of a socialist mentality. But when people want to trust the very government to do the things that they realize the government that they're actually so terribly against, it just blows my mind. They talk all day about how bad the government is, and then but they want the government to take over certain things. Government should be doing this, that's, you know, well, that's not the way it works. We you know, because we can't have it both ways here. You can't let the government or depend on the government to do certain things if you realize the corruption in government. That's just the nature of government. How are you going to, you know, stop that? Give them too much power, and that's the next thing you know, they have too much power, and they have power over you, and then everything that they do, you know, affects your life. That's great if we have a benevolent government that is subservient to the people. But how do you, you know, good luck with that, I guess. Because you're not going to have that if you give them too much power. That's just because people are going to be involved, and it just goes down that road. It's just ultimate power ultimately corrupts. Now, having said all that, I think what I'm going to do is put some more hot water in my chai cup here, because, frankly, it's just too strong. I got way too much. I think I can add a couple more drops of hot water there to get a little more out of this cup. It's called stretching your mileage a little bit. So that's what we're going to do. Now, I have one of the things that's happened. So Cornell Washington, I think his name is. He was running, and he's on the ballot in a few states. Well, in this one particular state, they're telling Robert F. Kennedy Jr. that he cannot take his name off the ballot. At the same time that they're telling Cornell he has to remove his name from the ballot. The reason being is because he's going to siphon votes in this particular state. It might be Michigan or Arizona. I can't remember where it is. I think it's Michigan. He might be siphoning votes. Cornell is a black man, African American. He might be siphoning votes from the Democrat Party, from Kamala, from the Harris-Walz campaign that was duly elected by a democratic process of electors in their primary process. Or maybe that wasn't happening. Maybe that didn't happen. Maybe I just imagined that very free and fair process that they had. You know, they could have just had a flash primary. They could have done it. All the states could have done it. Every one of them could have done it. They could have ruled, you know, the DNC could have come in and said, we have to do this because, you know, we have a candidate that's stepping down. This has to happen. All of a sudden, Kamala was just thrust upon them, and they're supposed to be okay with that. And all of a sudden, she's the, you know, this person who's come down from heaven that is there to save us all from Orange Man Bad. So now we have a lot of this fallout now is, so the same legislature, the same attorney general, the same election committee that is trying to get Robert F. Kennedy Jr. to say that he can't remove himself from the ballot is the same people, are the same people who are telling us that, or telling them that, well, guess what? Cornell has to remove himself from the ballot. This is the kind of disingenuous, ridiculous hypocrisy that happens on the left so often, and it's just it's mind numbing. It's absolutely disgusting, in my opinion, when this kind of thing happens. So this is where we are. This is what we're. This is what's what they're doing now. They're just blatantly trying. This, in my opinion, this is election interference. The whole thing with the debate, by the way, it's coming out now more and more. There are some whistleblowers from behind the scenes, I guess, now that are coming in and saying how Kamala was definitely, she was given these practice questions. Now, if you listen to the way she answers the questions, and this has been analyzed by many people, much more professional than I am, even though I can tell you right off the bat that this is what was happening, just because I'm used to the difference between someone speaking off the cuff like I do. I do not read a script on this show. I have no script. I don't even usually have an outline. Once in a while, maybe 30% of the time, I will jot down a few subjects that I want to really remind myself to talk about, because otherwise I'll go off on a tangent. But I will usually write some things down and say, okay, I really want to make sure I talk about this, this, and this. Usually maybe one or two, 3 points possibly that I really want to make sure I talk about. Otherwise, I'll forget about them. I do that occasionally. I don't have a stack of stuff like Rush Limbaugh, which is why he's probably, you know, it's much more popular than I am, obviously, or was. I am not there. I do not do. I talk off the cuff all the time. I can hear someone speaking because of my background in voiceover work and reading scripts and doing those kinds of things. I can tell when someone's reading a script. Now, their body language also gives it off as well. It's a big deal too. But because there is a sense of portrayal and acting that people do. Now, some people do things with a teleprompter, or the cue, as they call it in southern Australia, that operates similar to what I'm doing with this show. They'll have a few topics up, maybe some things that some points they want to make about each topic. So they kind of have a plan ahead of time. This show is not planned at all. I usually don't have any kind of plan. I usually just turn the thing on and, hey, let's see what comes out of my brain. That's kind of the way it is. But these people, when they're acting like this, it becomes very obvious to me. Now, I don't know that it's obvious to everybody, but I think everyone has an innate sense of phoniness when they hear someone speaking who's acting or reading a script. They can't usually tell what it is. They can't put their finger on it, but they just know that there's an uncomfortableness about the way the person, unless they are wanting to be deceived. If that is the case, I guarantee you, they will listen and absorb it all and think that was a wonderful, you know, awesome, amazing speech. And actually, the most amazing speeches out there are the ones that are not prepared. However, the ones that are prepared are the ones that fool the people who want to be fooled. They can make a speech sound really wonderful if they practice it and read it. Now, there's this pastor that I know. I guess I'll call her a pastor, I guess. She is a speaker. I'll call her a speaker at a church. She memorizes almost word for word her message for Sunday morning. I would guess she probably rehearses this. The sermon 5, 6, maybe 7 times prior to actually performing it on Sunday morning. The reason I know this is because the way that how she flows with the speech. There is no hesitation from thought to thought, nothing natural that she says. Now, there's nothing natural about her speech. She talks very fast, she covers a lot of territory. And now she used to do this. There was a time when she was at a church where she wasn't the head pastor. She actually went. They went off and she started her own church. And once in a while, they would let her preach. I heard her a few times. She would do 3 services, and everything was verbatim, exactly the same, in all 3 speeches. So there was no question to me that obviously, of course, I had to hear it because I was there for all three meetings because I was on staff at that time. I was not in that kind of leadership, but I was in. I just had to be there for all three services. So this was one of those things, and for a while they had four. It was uncomfortable for me, to say the least. The regular pastor there, the lead pastor, when he would do a sermon, I wouldn't mind listening to all three or four of his sermons because he always threw something else in. It was always something different about the way he presented something or his presentation was different a little bit each time. It kind of made it a little bit entertaining to see where he would change up something or throw something else in or a little anecdote that he might throw in or a story. Not with her. It was completely rehearsed. She might have even spoke it seven or eight times. I'm sure she had it typed out somewhere. And she probably read it. The first day she would read it probably five or six times. The second day she would probably try to read it five or six times, try to do some paragraphs where she, and then just kind of, now it was in her natural, it was her sermon. She actually, did probably write the thing as far as I know. I don't think she was reading somebody else's sermon. Could have been, I don't know. But at the same time, she obviously and definitely was presenting a speech. So it was, I can spot those kinds of things even without that. She could be making one talk and I would probably figure it out within the first 5 minutes of the talk. Because it's, or maybe even less, probably less in many cases, just because every time Kamala would say something in her debate, it was obvious to me this was a prepared answer. And it was prepared specifically, and of course, and the whole thing, again, like I said yesterday, the whole thing starts off with, so, we're going to do this. It's not, so, we're, it's, so, we're, she's already got this prepared, and when you put that word so in there, it's as if she's carrying on a conversation from a particular point that she's already had. In other words, she's already visited this. She's already been there. This is prepared. Sometimes you'll see this in interviews of people, like a business owner, and they'll ask the business owner, so they'll say, do you have, what kind of whatever do you use for doing your business here with this thing? The business owner will say, so we're doing this and this and this. This person probably had the questions ahead of time, first of all, or this person has answered this question many times. It's kind of a tell in some ways. Now, some people use that word a lot in their everyday conversation. I don't know. That it just happens. Kind of like. So like I did this like that, and I was like, it was like, I was kind of like, I was verklempt, they'll use that a lot. That's just become, it becomes a tick word, I call it. It's in normal conversation, it becomes very distracting for most people. If you notice, it's not distracting until you notice it. Once you notice it, you can't stand it. It's one of those things where if you hadn't pointed it out to me, I wouldn't have noticed it. But now that you pointed it out to me, I can't stop noticing it, kind of thing. And that's, I'll do that with my wife occasionally. Somebody will be up speaking, we'll listen to a preacher or a speaker or whatever we're listening to. I say, did you notice he keeps saying this or saying that? Because it's bothering me. And she'll say, well, thanks. Now, I wasn't noticing it, but now I am. And I can't stop noticing it. So I tend to kind of ruin things occasionally about that. I also, I won't get into that. So we have these issues like this that I think are very important to understand that this is all, again, this is political theater. This is all a show to them. She is the show candidate. She's not out answering interviews, doing things on the news, presenting you with her policies and her programs and her plans on how she's going to do any of this. How are you going to save the economy? Well, I was a middle class. I grew up middle class. That's why I'm wearing $12,000 worth of jewelry right now. And after all, since I'm, middle class and I had a job at McDonald's, that's how I'm going to save the middle class. Because our values are for the middle class. We're going to build the middle class. Oh, it's all about the middle class. The middle class. Yeah, no, she knows nothing about the middle class. She probably has not driven a a car. She certainly hasn't driven a minivan in her life. Probably hasn't driven herself around at all in the last 12 years. Hasn't pumped gas into her car. Has no idea what it's like to live a normal life. But she's oppressed because she's a woman of color, you know. So, here we go. This is where we're at with all this stuff. And I guess my point that I'd like to make on this fine Friday day, you know, the day before Shabbat here, as we enter into rest, a solemn occasion. I really think that the phoniness is showing through. People are getting weary of most of this. Now you're gonna continue to hear the legacy media. You're gonna MSNBC, CNN, ABC, CBS. They're all gonna be continuing to carry water for the campaign. They're gonna continue to be the way they are. And I guess that somebody at this is an interesting thing too. You know, the reason this is getting some traction, especially the reason it's getting some traction, there is a political consultant that was big on getting Bill Clinton elected, and it was actually part of Hillary Clinton's campaign, who is livid about the fact that they did what they did with that with this debate. That he said it was obvious that they actually tricked. You know, this was a setup from the beginning of this debate, and he's mad because he knows the American people aren't that stupid. He's come out now in condemnation of what they've done now with the debate process, and he's very upset about it. And good on him. He's showing that he's more interested in having a fair and free debate, and he's realizing that hey, this is not what these people are doing. They're trying to interfere with the election. This is manipulation of the American people, and he doesn't like it. That's big. It's a big deal. Especially coming from a Democrat these days. They typically tend to be lockstep. Which means to me that there could be a little bit of angst by a Hillary Clinton, certain Hillary Rodham Clinton, behind the scenes here. Because it's possible that she might be a little bit mad that someone else is going to get the title of first woman president that she thinks she should have had. She came out, she did do a speech at the DNC. Nobody's talking about it. Nobody's saying anything about it. Which I think is quite interesting that she has not been on the trail, she's not been doing anything else. Hasn't been, completely behind this whole idea of, so she's not just about having a woman be the president. She's about her being the woman to be the president. With some other woman, she doesn't care. She's not out there pushing this. So it's very interesting to see what's going to happen here in the next couple of weeks. We have, another 6 weeks before the election, 6-7 weeks. So it will be very interesting to see at what point some of this starts to come together, and we're going to continue to see the polls. Now, there was no jump in the polls either way, and I think it's still going to come down to voter motivation. Who's going to show up to the polls? And with all their nefarious little trickster shenanigans, we'll call them, illegal things that they're going to do, manipulation and interference that they're going to do, all the while accusing the other side of doing the same things. The very things that they're doing. This is standard operating procedure for them. When I first heard them say that, I was like, yeah, okay, occasionally they do that. No, it's all the time. It is constantly all the time. Everything I'm seeing about the way they operate is constantly that way. Now, Trump came out with this other thing. He's going to try to put this policy in place where he has no overtime or no taxes on overtime, which is kind of a big deal. Because a lot of people are putting in overtime, people are working really hard, and of course, if you don't have taxes taken out of that amount, that's because now you're getting time and a half with no taxes taken out. Now you're actually making money. You're actually making something. You're not losing it all. That's the biggest thing about working overtime. People will work overtime. This is a huge motivator, folks. I got to tell you, if they know they can work overtime, if they're going to get overtime for doing something, and they can keep it all, that's you're really getting ahead now. Because typically when you work overtime, at least I know in my situation, I guess I'm pretty much in the highest tax bracket anyway, but if you work overtime and you make extra money, it typically will put you, if you do it a lot on a regular basis, it will put you into a different tax bracket. And the next thing you know, now all of a sudden you have more taxes taken out, and it's you'd look at yourself and think, okay, I just worked all this overtime and I made less money doing it. I mean, you made more, but not as much more as you should have made. It pretty much robs you of the extra time and a half that you would have normally gotten. You're really not getting time and a half, because it's taking that percentage away from all of your pay, not just your overtime pay. So it's a very frustrating thing. I know some people who've gone out there and gotten two jobs. I worked two full-time jobs for a while, for almost a year. I worked two full-time jobs. I worked a night security job. I worked night security in college, but I also worked night security on my own when I was living in an apartment by myself. Like, so I had to share an apartment with two other people, and we could still barely afford it. I was working a night security job 5 nights a week, and I also worked a full-time job during the day. I would go from working the night security job to, I would show up at the other job at about an hour after they actually started to work that day, but he needed workers so bad that I would go in about an hour later. I was getting off my security job at the same time that they were starting up the job at the factory. And then I would drive to the factory job. I would start in, punch in, clock in, and start working. And I had a lot of power tools, had a lot of saws, and it was a ladder-making company, actually. They made ladders out of wood. And I was the one running the saws, cutting wood after being up all night. And I would go to my apartment, sleep for about 6 hours, get up about 11 o'clock at night, 10 o'clock at night, and then I would head out into the darkness. Actually, 9 o'clock at night, I guess. Head out into the darkness and once again, I had to drive about 45 minutes to my other job, just back and forth. And do the same thing all over again the next day. And on the weekend, of course, I would just crash all weekend, not do anything, just because I was so tired. Somewhere in there, I was able to pick up some food somewhere, or bought stuff off the. So it became more expensive because I had to buy stuff from the catering truck. I had to buy stuff from the, you know, whatever. But I wasn't making, I did it for a year, and I didn't get ahead doing that. I absolutely did not get ahead. It just seemed like I was spinning my wheels. Now, maybe if I'd have done it, maybe I could have managed it properly, maybe I could have managed it differently. Maybe I was spending too much money on whatever. But the time driving back and forth to each job, and then by the time I paid my taxes and get everything done and paid for food and everything else, it was just, I had no more, no, I really didn't have any extra money. I was a two-income household with one person living there. I was living in my own little, at least my part of the apartment. So it was just a crazy time. It was a crazy deal. So I just want to say, sometimes the taxes make a huge difference. And not having taxes on overtime is great. Now, I don't think he'll ever get that passed. I don't think Congress will ever pass it, because they feel like, oh, we have to have taxes. How are we going to? We have a deficit. If we do that, we're going to have a deficit. This is much like Social Security and welfare. Social Security... Dave Ramsey has some very good information about Social Security and how stupid it is. It is a stupid government program that we have convinced ourselves that we have to have. Don't you dare take away my Social Security. Now, some people live on it. It's true. It is very true. Some people live on Social Security. But that's the problem. If you would have taken the same amount of money that Social Security takes from you and invested it somewhere, and of course that's the problem, people won't invest the money, they'll spend it. But if the government just forced you to put that into an account in which you could direct, like let's say they took it, instead of taking it from you and putting it into just a lockbox, which is it's actually just a Ponzi scheme. They take the money and they use it every year. You know, it doesn't go into a lockbox. They're not taking your money and putting it anywhere. They take your money, and based on what you put in, that's how much you're going to get out when you go to start drawing Social Security. And then people who are alive and working today and paying Social Security, they're the ones who pay the Social Security. They're the better paying for your Social Security. It doesn't go into a savings account. So this kind of stuff is going on. Well, what ends up happening is the Social Security system, if they were to maybe mandate or force you somehow to, okay, we're going to take this much out of your check, and we're going to provide you with a fund that money's going to go into, and you can direct how you invest those funds. See, there's a couple things that this does. One is it puts a huge amount of money into the market. We're talking, when you look at everybody who's out there working, let's say 100 million jobs out there. I think it's a little less than that right now. It's like 90-some million that are out there. And all of a sudden, you have everybody, all the money that's being made in those jobs, and you have people paying Social Security. And they're Social Security with withholdings. All that money now goes into some kind of investment on some kind of market fund, some kind of money market, some kind of stock market, whatever it is. You want to talk about a booming economy. We would have an economy that was so rich, it would be amazing. Your investments would actually be worth something in 20 years or 40 years or however long you've put into that thing. And then when you get out, you draw it and you can do whatever. Now think about it again. Again, you're going to now have a lot more in your elder years. You can afford to pay your property tax. You can afford to pay for your cost of living, your medical expenses, all those other things that people can't pay because I'm going to get $1,800 a month for my Social Security, and they're going to take taxes out of that. So you're not going to get that much, which is asinine as well. Government's going to send me a check, so I got to pay the government for me getting a check from the government. So it's just stupid. So on and on this stuff goes, and we just take it. We don't think it can change. Well, you got death and taxes, death and taxes. Well, here's the thing. They could get rid of the whole Social Security system. They could get rid of all the safety net programs. They print so much money right now that all we would have to do to make this work, and the economy would be so robust that they could afford, that it really wouldn't hurt the economy for them to print enough money to have a safety net program that would just simply be from printing money, monetizing it, they call that. They could very easily monetize it, absorb it, and it would not affect the value of your dollar whatsoever. It certainly wouldn't affect it any more than it does now. It already affects. Now, speaking of all this, there's an interesting time when, think what you will of President Nixon. He did take us off the silver standard, which I think was a big mistake. However, the way he managed the federal dollar, the U.S. dollar, I think there's something to be said for this. Now, most people don't realize this. We had a time, right about the time that Ford assumed the presidency, we had a short period of time until the end of his term, until Carter took over, where we had deflation in this country, and it was not painful. Nobody was hurt by the deflation that was happening. And what that means, I go, oh, we had deflation. That means things are losing their value. No, the dollar is gaining its value. You could stash $1,000 in your mattress, and in a year from now, you can buy more with it if we're in a deflationary situation. In other words, your savings account, even if it's not drawing interest, becomes worth more. It's a crazy thought, and yet it was happening. And we didn't have any kind of rampant economy problems. It was amazing. So folks, as we go into the weekend, there are solutions to our problems. And of course, they'll be better if everybody just gets saved and becomes a believer. It would certainly make many things better, morally. So in the process, folks, pray for our nation, pray for our leaders, pray for this election cycle, that God will have his way, that everything will work out the way it should, come what may. God bless. Have a great weekend. Shabbat shalom.